Retention is again a contentious issue in Iowa this election, just as it was 2 years ago. This hour, a look at the pro and con arguments for the retention of Justice David Wiggins. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Justice Wiggins has been targeted for defeat by critics of the April 2009 landmark case in which the Iowa Supreme Court, by a unanimous 7-0 decision, struck down a state law defining marriage as only between one man and one woman. This hour, we'll talk with people on both sides of the retention issue. And we get started right after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Judicial retention is again a contentious issue in Iowa this election, just as it was 2 years ago during the 2010 midterm elections. In 2010, opponents of a court ruling successfully led an effort to defeat three Iowa Supreme Court justices who were up for retention in 2010, Chief Justice Marcia Ternus and Justices Michael Streit and David Baker. Governor Terry Branstad appointed three justices to replace those ousted members. Today, we'll hear the arguments over the retention of Justice David Wiggins. Like those three previous justices who were ousted in 2010, Wiggins has been targeted for defeat by critics of the April 2009 landmark case, a case in which the Iowa Supreme Court, by a unanimous 7-0 decision, struck down a state law defining marriage as only between one man and one woman. The justices ruled that the statute violated constitutional equal protection provisions, a decision that effectively legalized civil marriages for couples of the same gender in Iowa. This hour, we want to talk with people on both sides of the retention issue. Later in the hour, Bob Vanderplaats will be joining us of the Family Leader. He's once again this election cycle leading the no vote on retention of David Wiggins. Guy Cook will be representing the yes on the retention vote issue a little later in the program. And we want to have your views on this hour as we explore how our system works in this first half hour and what makes a judicial system more or less political? And listeners, we'd like to have you join our conversations. Will you be voting for the retention of Justice Wiggins? Or have you perhaps voted? Because we have had early voting going on for some time now. Why or why not? 1-866-780-9100. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or find Iowa Public Radio on Facebook. Joining us, first of all, Steve Pace, Senior Vice President at Shuttleworth and Ingersoll. Steve Pace was on the Judicial Nominating Commission, a member of that commission, and we'll explore what that does in just a moment between 2005 and 2011 on that commission for the state of Iowa. Steve Pace, welcome to our program.
Thank you, Ben.
And joining us by phone, Matt Dummermuth. He is a partner at Whitaker and, I hope I'm saying it correctly, Hagenau, a former U.S. attorney for the Northern District of Iowa. Matt, are you with us by phone?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for joining us. Gentlemen, let's start off with you, Steve Place. Let's set the foundation and tell us about our system, this system that has been argued over in the last few years. What is our system? It's a merit system. How do we deal with judges appointing them and retaining them?
Okay, well, let me give you a little history. Thank you, Ben, and thank you for having us on the program today. First of all, I'll just do this real briefly. In 1857, the state of Iowa adopted a constitution. There were some earlier than that, but from 1857 until 1962, when a new constitutional amendment was adopted, Iowa elected its judges. So it was a popular election. Parties put up judges.
Just like the sheriff or something like that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It was exactly like that. And in the 50s and early 60s, that became a system that people didn't like. It didn't work very well. It was very political. The idea was we weren't getting the best judges. And so pretty much everybody, most of the groups, went together and said, let's change it. The constitutional amendment was ratified in 1962, and from 62 until today, we've had a different way of doing it, not elections, but a merit selection system. And it works. Let's just talk about the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals, because that's really the one that's most in the news now. There's a commission. That's the one I was on. And that commission then interviews nominees. They can nominate themselves, and you have to be a member of the licensed to practice law in Iowa to be eligible, and there are other characteristics I can go into if you want. But basically, they nominate themselves. The commission interviews them first privately and then in public, and then sends three names up to the governor, and the governor picks then the one that's going to fill that slot.
Okay. And as for our purposes in this conversation, that's the background that we need to know as far as what system was put in place in 1962 after we stopped electing judges to office. Now, Matt Dummermuth, I understand you have some problems with the system that's been in place since 1962. Tell us what those are.
Well, I think the one thing that was put in place in 1962 was the judicial retention election, and it's important to understand why that was put in place. It's part of our Constitution. There's not a lot of explanation for why we have it, but we do know that there's a legislative impeachment section in place so that the legislature can remove judges if they engage in misdemeanors or malfeasance, and there's a judicial removal provision so that if a judge is incompetent, perhaps by reason of age or something like that, the judges can remove judges themselves. So the primary reason left for the public through the citizen removal provision seems to be to remove judges who decide cases wrongly.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important to step back and see, okay, why do we have these retention elections?
Now, you're saying that's the reason for the – it sounds like it was a process of elimination, and you're saying, therefore, the retention vote
right.
is for wrongly decided cases. Steve Pace, is that the way you understand it as well?
No. I would disagree with that, and I think many folks would. The system we've had has worked very well. If you say wrongly decided, that presupposes that you're deciding what was good and what was bad and what was right and what was wrong. We have an independent judiciary in Iowa. I'm very proud of that. And it is impartial, and it's not supposed to have political agendas. And so one group deciding that they don't like the way a judge mm-hmm. has decided a case doesn't mean that that judge ought to be voted out just because that group happens to disagree.
So what would be the purpose? Matt is saying that's what seems to be left over in not a lot said, he said, about what the retention vote was about. What can you point to that tells us what the retention vote is, in fact, about?
The retention vote, it should be about and has been about for the entire history of this. There have been four judges that have been removed until prior to 2010. Those were judges that were yelling at people from the bench, not doing a good job, not competent. There were only four. No Supreme Court justices had ever been removed. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because the people of Iowa had said if somebody's not doing a good job, if they're not good at their job anymore for whatever reason, we can remove them. And that's the check. It also, you know, allows people to participate. Mm-hmm. And I should say, if I can, that there's a lot of public input in the system we have now. The public has letters that they write to commissioners. They talk to the governor about who should be selected and so forth.
Okay. I want to make sure you have equal time here, Matt Dummermuth. Go on with your point. You're talking about retention vote. I understand that the two of you disagree on the reason for the retention vote, but please go on.
Yeah, and I would disagree with Steve that, and this is the position of the bar in the state, it seems, is that judges can't get decisions wrong. And, you know, for the first 100 years of our state, we popularly elected judges to begin with. So it seems like the people in 1962 wanted to retain a check so that if judges did exceed their true legal authority, which, you know, the legislature does that fairly often, the executive branch does that fairly often, that's when courts step in to correct them, so it's not unreasonable to assume that the court might do that at certain times. And the people of Iowa retained their right to take action if that happened. Now, in terms of the some of the flaws, I think it's also part of the way that the public can correct some of the flaws in our selection system to begin with.
Okay, you're talking about this judicial nominating commission, which Steve Pace served on.
Right.
What do you see is wrong with that?
The term merit selection assumes that if a judge is impartial and professionally competent, that they'll automatically interpret the law correctly. I think that's the assumption behind it. But how a judge views the judiciary's role, how they approach interpreting the law, is no less important than being impartial on the facts, especially at the appellate level. And we see that a judge's judicial philosophy, their approach to interpreting the law, affects judicial decisions in a certain number of often high-profile cases. So the question is, who gets to pick what judicial philosophy is going to be on our courts, especially at the appellate level? And the flaw in our system is that not only is the system not politically accountable, so you can't vote a governor out of office or a senator out of office who appoints a judge that you think has the wrong philosophy, but the appointments are dominated by lawyers who have a special interest in the outcome of cases and who are largely, their politics are more liberal than the general public. And there have been studies done in Missouri and Tennessee showing that merit plan nominees in those states were much more liberal than the state as a whole.
Okay. Steve Pace a chance to get in here and talk about the criticism that this nomination system lacks political accountability, says Matt.
And I don't think that the politics ought to play any part in picking judges anyway.
But shouldn't you be sure that the politics are fairly distributed? We have to recognize politics are in our world, don't we?
Politics are in our world, absolutely. One of the things that I need to emphasize is half the commission are lay people appointed by the governor. They're not all lawyers. Secondly, the commissioners ask very specifically, and now all the interviews are out in public. Anybody can come, and it's also broadcast so that you can listen to the questions. And if you do that, you will see that the questions are asked about what is your judicial philosophy. Mm-hmm. That is something that overtly has gone into, so that if somebody has an agenda, a political agenda, ahead of time, that would be something that the commission would consider and typically would say, well, that's not appropriate. The judge should come in with being impartial and decide according to the law.
But that doesn't work for you in its present form, Matt.
Well, I agree they made the system more open in the last couple of years, but it's still a lawyer majority. There's 8 of the 15 people have to be lawyers on that commission. If you look at Nebraska's merit selection system, they have partisan, they have to be politically neutral, even number of Republicans and Democrats.
And that's a system, votes, you would hold that up as a model, Nebraska's, for us to look at.
I think that would be an improvement. I hold the federal system up as a model if you eliminate filibusters, because then the judicial philosophy of the candidates, their view of the role of courts, is out in the open. The president's on record of who he's nominating. The senators who vote are on record for who they're electing or who they're voting against or for. And we can have a very public debate over, what judicial philosophy. And I think it's important to step back and say, what do we mean by politics? I agree partisan politics have no place in judicial decisions, but to the extent politics means a judicial philosophy of what are you going to look to interpret a law, or what policy preferences when the law is silent come into play, then I think those have to be taken into account. And the best way to do that is not with a majority of lawyers whose values and views of the law aren't necessarily the same as the general public.
Matt Dummermuth is with us, along with Steve Pace. I'd like to have Pat Baird join our discussion as well. He's in our Iowa City studio. Pat Baird, welcome to our program.
Pleasure.
You are a retired president and chief executive officer of Aegon USA. You retired in 2010. We brought you into this conversation because you provide a different perspective. I don't know if it's pro or con, what it is, but on this retention vote, but you provide a business perspective. Tell us what your vantage point tells you about a state's judicial system, how we appoint and retain judges.
Well, there is no question that running a business like Aegon USA, which is a national business, doing business in all 50 states, we always had three important criteria in where we wanted to grow our business and grow our employee centers. And one was cost and quality of labor. And as you can imagine, Iowa ranks very highly. Two was fairness of insurance regulation. We would not domesticate an insurance company in a state where the insurance commissioner was elected. Iowa has an appointed insurance commissioner. And third, and as important, is fairness of the judiciary. And Iowa has always been ranked very high nationally in its fairness. It has no political agenda. Uh-huh. And, you know, until 2 years ago, it was always an important factor in determining where we would grow our business. And indeed, in Iowa, we grew our business in Cedar Rapids more than any other employee center for that reason.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about how you see this retention vote, because you throw out a word like fairness. Each side, both sides, will claim their interest is in fairness and not having politics be a part of the equation.
And thus far, Ben, your conversation has been about the merit selection process, which candidly, as a business guy, doesn't rank very high on my priority list. What ranks high is how do we go about disputing situations such as the Defense of Marriage Act. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as the proponents of that act say, the Constitution written 150, 60 years ago, you know, never contemplated such a situation. Okay, and I accept that.
Why is that important to you as a CEO, former CEO, of Aegon, a company, when you're deciding a location for your company?
Because clearly what has happened is that the Constitution, you know, you want consistent rule of law applied in the judiciary, and you want your Constitution upheld. And what is happening is the proponents of the Marriage Act have said rather than going back and amending the Constitution, which if that were the case, I wouldn't be here talking to you. But instead, they've decided to bring in money from outside the state. They've decided to bring in politicians from outside the state. And they've decided to make this a political issue on the retention vote. And that squarely, for the first time, introduces politics into Iowa's judiciary, and that's very reckless and very dangerous.
Can I ask you to react to that, Matt Dummermuth?
Well, I think what you're seeing locally is some of what you're seeing nationally in terms of debates over judicial activism and the role of courts. So it's not surprising in a decision like this that brings to light the debate over what is the role of the courts, how should we interpret laws, do they change with time, or do we stick to what the text, the context, and the original understanding of those laws are until they're changed by, you know, future legislatures or future generations.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the people who voted no last time were saying that we weren't convinced by the decision that it was the right interpretation of the law or the role of the courts or both. And this is one way to avoid future decisions that might be incorrect by removing justices. That's what they were saying.
You asked the question.
And I think from their perspective, they were protecting the rule of law, trying to keep policy preferences out of the judiciary and in the hands of the legislature and the executive.
You asked what is the role of the court. Now, is the role of the court – let's talk about that question. Is it to pay attention when you're a judge or a justice, pay attention to the Iowa Constitution? Do you give any consideration to the people's opinion and will, Steve Pace?
Well, the justices, what they did was interpret the Iowa Constitution, mm-hmm. and specifically the Equal Protection Clause. It wasn't a vote on do we want to allow same-sex marriage or not,
right.
in Iowa. That wasn't what it was about. And what they did was a classic role of the highest court in a state, which is to interpret the Constitution. They did so, and they did so unanimously. They did so in the tradition of courts all the way back to the Founding Fathers. There's supposed to be an independent judiciary, impartial judiciary that protects the rights of citizens. And the Equal Protection Clause is a very important part of our Constitution, not only in Iowa but also nationally. And that's what the court did. They didn't vote on marriage. they interpreted the Constitution and said, is this law consistent with it or not, and decided it was not. And for a group to say, we don't agree with the decision, therefore we're going to throw the judges out, then raises the specter of judges becoming intimidated by outside groups who want to come in and vote them out if they don't like what they decide, even though they're trying to interpret the Constitution as it should be. And of course, one can always disagree with decisions that a court makes. But in this case, the court did what it should have done, and to have somebody targeted because they decided a case in a certain way is, I agree with Pat, very dangerous and bad for our system.
Matt Dummermuth, it was a unanimous decision, seven justices deciding in this case against the Iowa law that defined marriage as one man and one woman. You're saying that in this case, the people should be able to say all seven got it wrong? Or tell me a little bit more about your thinking.
Yeah, I think they are. They've been given that authority through the retention election to say that.
Okay.
And I think they were not convinced that the interpretation was correct. And I think when you see the U.S. Supreme Court is likely going to take one of these marriage cases. There's several percolating around the country. And I would, I think it'd be very likely to say that it's going to be a split decision. And so, you know, there are differences, and it comes down to your judicial philosophy and your understanding of how you should interpret. And that's what it is. What's at issue is who decides who gets to whose judicial philosophy and way of interpreting is going to be reflected on our bench. And I think there's a debate over that. There's definitely a debate going on and has been for decades. And I think from Pat Baird's perspective, what he wants is some predictability. But I'm not sure we can have predictability, which is good for everyone, good for business, I understand that, until we resolve whose judicial philosophy is correct. And I think that's what the retention election is about, and why it's, you know, why there's major differences of opinion going on.
We have a quick response before we have to go in a second and say goodbye. Steve, do you want to get in there or Pat? Quickly.
Well, I would be happy.
This is Pat.
This is Pat. One more time. It's not the issue at hand. The issue is right now we have political ads being run on television. We have millions of dollars coming in from outside the state. We have made this a political issue for the first time, and that's what I think is dangerous and reckless and not a good precedent.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Our time says we have to go. Thank you very much. Pat Baird, retired president and chief executive officer of Aegon USA. Matt Dummermuth joining us by phone, a partner at Whittaker Hagenow. And Steve Pace, senior vice president at Shuttleworth and Ingersoll. Thank you very much for this conversation. When we come back, Bob Vanderplaats of the Family Leader, who's been leading the charge against this retention. Also, Guy Cook, who has been going for yes. Your opinion after this short break. Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're exploring this hour judicial retention, which is once again a contentious issue in this election here in Iowa, just as it was 2 years ago in the 2010 midterm elections. We're hearing about the retention vote of Justice David Wiggins in the Iowa Supreme Court. Like the three justices who were ousted from that high court in Iowa in 2010, Wiggins has been targeted for defeat by critics of the April 2009 landmark case, a case, the Varnum case, which the Iowa Supreme Court, by a unanimous decision, 7-0, struck down a state law defining marriage as only between one man and one woman. The justices ruled that the statute violated constitutional equal protection provisions, a decision that effectively legalized civil marriages for couples of the same gender here in the state of Iowa. This hour, we're exploring issues, pros and cons, arguments on each side. We'd like to have you join our conversation, your opinion on the judge retention vote. How will you vote, or how have you voted? How have you voted when you've turned that ballot over, and why? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining us for this second half hour in our Des Moines studio, Bob Vanderplaats. He's president and CEO of The Family Leader, and The Family Leader leading the charge with the no vote in this retention of David Wiggins. Bob Vanderplaats, welcome to our program.
Ben, thanks for having me.
Also joining us by phone, Guy Cook is a trial lawyer. He's also president-elect at the Iowa State Bar Association. Guy Cook here urging a yes vote on the retention. And because you're the one advocating the change here, Bob Vanderplaats, let me have you take the first crack at giving us the arguments why Judge Justice David Wiggins should not be retained.
Well, Ben, first of all, thank you for having us on. I think it's very clear, and I think Iowans understand that, that courts don't get to make law. And if you read the Varnum opinion and you read the Iowa Constitution and you apply them together, you'll find out that this court legislated from the bench and basically declaring Iowa a same-sex marriage state. They don't get to do that. They can void legislation they deem unconstitutional. They just can't make new law. They executed from the bench basically by saying all 99 counties will follow suit. And then the evolving nature that they applied with our Constitution and handing out unimaginable rights that the founders could never have imagined, they don't get to amend our Constitution. That's only we, the people, who get to amend our Constitution. The people of Iowa figured this out in 2010, that it's we, the people, not we, the courts. They voted three justices off. And in addition, you know, David Wiggins, even by his own peers, is the lowest rated Supreme Court judge in Iowa history when the scoring mechanism has been applied. So we believe that on November 6th, the people will vote no Wiggins. If they want to learn more, go to nowiggins.com.
Guy Cook, let me have you tell us what you feel are the yes arguments.
Yes, thank you, Ben, and thank you also for providing this forum to educate folks. I respect Bob Vanderplaats's passion. In fact, I told him that at our bus tour stop in Pella. You remember that, Bob? And the main thing here is, unfortunately, in spite of Bob's passion for this issue, he's just wrong. And it's not just me saying this. The court did its job. They applied the Constitution, and they applied the equal protection provision of the Constitution that ensures that laws that are wrong, that apply to people unequally, are struck down, and that's their job. And they didn't make law. They exercised their constitutional duty under our check and balance system. They didn't legislate from the bench. They simply applied the Iowa Constitution. They didn't impose same-sex marriage upon the citizens of Iowa. They simply ruled on the case that came before them. They were not activist judges. They didn't file this lawsuit. They didn't seek this case. And at its core, what's going on here is the court doing its job. And Iowa has a proud tradition of fair and impartial judges and rulings respected throughout the country, not by the lawyers here in Iowa or me speaking, but by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which has routinely found Iowa to be one of the top judicial systems and judges, some of the tops in the country.
Okay. I want to read the clause that we're talking about at the center of this debate so that we don't interpret it wrongly. We can get these words out. It's only three lines. All laws of a general nature shall have a uniform operation. The General Assembly shall not grant to any citizen or class of citizens privileges or immunities which, upon the same terms, shall not equally belong to all citizens. Now, Bob Vanderplaats, you have said that you charge these justices with evolving the Constitution. I believe you said amending the Constitution, and that's not their job. When someone says that we cannot give rights, privileges, immunities to some citizens and not others, and in this case, those on the yes side, the yes retention side, would say we have to give everyone the right to marry another individual they love. How would you counter that?
Ben, it's pretty easy to counter, and that's why I take offense with Guy Cook about saying that I'm wrong or that our focus is wrong, because the U.S. Supreme Court even disagrees with this in Baker versus Nelson. What you just read there, Ben, was Article 1.6 of the Iowa Constitution. Common sense tells us that laws have standards. A 13-year-old is a citizen, but they're not going to vote on November 6. A 4-year-old is a citizen, but we don't allow them to drive a car. Laws have standards. In the U.S. Supreme Court, Baker versus Nelson, where this issue was brought up to them on the equal protection provision, and the Varnum opinion never addresses this because it didn't fit their hypothesis. That's what makes them an activist court. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled that, no, the equal protection provision does not require states to start marrying same-sex couples. It just doesn't apply. The U.S. District Court on August 8, 2012, out of Hawaii, said that to follow the Varnum opinion and to go that direction would be akin to judicial legislation, legislating from the bench. And so that is why we believe, as does Judge Wiggins, we've got him on tape saying this, as does former Chief Justice Mark McCormick, we've got him on tape saying this, marriage needs to be resolved by the representatives of the people or by a vote of the people. And that's what we agree with. The fact where Guy Cook and his peers say, well, they didn't make law from the bench, well, why are we marrying same-sex couples today? Mm-hmm. If you void, Article 12.1 says the Supreme Court can void legislation they deem unconstitutional. But the second sentence says of Article 12.1, the General Assembly will enact all legislation to carry out this Constitution. So if you void, just hear me out a minute, if you void the Defense of Marriage Act, say you void the marriage statute, then there is no marriage law, meaning that if somebody wanted to have polygamy in the state, they could have polygamy in the state because there's no law. But the fact is the law in the books, they'll get handed out in this legislative session, 2013, 595.1 and 2 is still very clear, one man, one woman.
Okay.
This court was activist in nature, and I think the people of Iowa will hold Judge Wiggins accountable for
it. I want to go to the phones in just a moment. A lot of people want to get into our conversation, but Guy Cook, I want to give you a short response, to be fair, to Bob Vanderplatz's points there.
Thank you very much. First of all, what Bob overlooks, unfortunately, is how this case came to the court, at the district court and came to the Supreme Court. The same-sex couples were refused a marriage license. They asked the court to declare that unconstitutional, the DOMA law, and then they asked if it was unconstitutional to enter an order directing the county recorder to issue a marriage license. That's what the request was, and that's a little-known fact that's overlooked in all this debate, that this is what the parties came to the court with, asking for, and this is the duty that the court has once they found the law to be unconstitutional, is to fashion the remedy and respond to the request that's been made. The Hawaii court case that Bob refers to, I'm sorry, he's misinformed on that. It's just not correct. The case in Hawaii is a completely different circumstance, and it would take a little more time to take that apart and discuss it, but he's just wrong on that. I would say this, too, and I, with all due respect to Bob, I told him this, that I respect his passion. I respect those people who disagree with the Varnum decision, but this is not about same-sex marriage. It's about our Constitution and ensuring justice and liberty for all. The last words of the Pledge of Allegiance and the first words of our Bill of Rights, the first six sentences talk about we the people, to form a more perfect union, establish justice. That's what this case is about, ensuring fair and equal justice for everyone.
Okay, let's get some callers on before our hour winds to a close. We have a few minutes left. 1-866-780-9100. How will you vote, or how have you voted when you turned the ballot over in this 2012 election for judicial retention, and why? 1-866-780-9100. Shannon in Davenport. Quickly, Shannon, we have a lot of people want to get in. What's your point?
Just quickly, I do believe that part of the role of our government, and including our courts, is to uphold the rights of minority groups. And for Mr. Vanderplatz to say that this should be a vote of the people, so does he think that the Civil Rights Act of 1964 should have been voted on by popular vote? I just don't understand his point of view. I've tried, but I can't.
Okay.
They are people, they are citizens, therefore they are they deserve the same rights as everyone else.
Okay,
period.
Shannon from Davenport, thank you very much. What about that, Bob Vanderplaats, when the people's opinion, the majority, is at odds with what the Constitution, the laws of the land?
Well, my comment, first of all, to Shannon would be you don't have to agree about Vanderplaats. Go to the U.S. Supreme Court when they ruled on this with Baker versus Nelson, saying that same-sex marriage didn't fit the equal protection provision. Marriage does have standards, and marriage has been our precedent, one man, one woman. So when they void legislation, it should go back to prior law, which was the norm and the precedent, which was one man, one woman marriage. The only reason whether Guy Cook believes this or not that we have same-sex marriage today is the court went beyond its jurisdiction to make law from the bench to say we'll have same-sex marriage. That needs to be by the voice of the people. When Guy Cook talks about this is about the Constitution, about the liberties and about our freedoms, that's what we totally agree with. Mm. Because when you allow a court to be independent to make law or to execute law or to even purport to amend your Constitution for the bench, you're losing your freedoms. And if they'll do this to marriage, they won't even blink their eyes when they take your private property or religious liberty or something else that you hold dear as freedom. This wise, it's we the people, not we the courts, and that's a way that we agree with Guy Cook that this is about the Constitution and about our freedoms.
Guy Cook, quickly.
I'm sorry again. In spite of Bob's passion and his belief in this, he's just wrong. He's just wrong. And I would encourage people to read the Des Moines Register yesterday, an editorial by the dean of the Drake Law School, who takes apart and explains how Bob's wrong on the law and the application of the Constitution. The fact of the matter is, our courts serve as a check and balance to ferret out, to rule against those laws that come before them that are unconstitutional. The Speaker of the Iowa House, Mr. Rantz, former GOP Speaker of the Iowa House, has said as so much that the court did its job. Governor Bob Ray, former Republican governor, said the court did its job. The former Lieutenant Governor of Iowa, Republican George Corning, the court did its job. Every editorial board, respective papers in this state have said the court did its job, including, I might say, the lawyer who argued Bob's side of the case on same-sex marriage before the Iowa Supreme Court came out yesterday and said Bob is wrong.
Let's put this question to you, an email from Chris in North Liberty, Bob Vanderplaats. He asks, what I want to know as a voter and resident of Iowa is simply whether Justice Wiggins and the Iowa Supreme Court did anything illegal in 2009, or is this only a disagreement with gay marriage?
No, it's completely, and this is what I would go to your person who sent in the email. It's complete judicial overreach. So when they swear an oath to the Iowa Constitution, then they go outside of their parameters. Into other parameters of the separation of powers, whether that's the legislature or the governor's role or even the people's role, that's where they go. On the other part, we had an attorney from the Iowa State Bar Association who Guy purports to represent, and we have a lot of attorneys from that association calling us and saying they completely disagree with Guy's position and the other positions, and we have constitutional lawyers agreeing with us. We have several governors agreeing with us about the threat to liberty, but In Chapter 51, the Iowa Code, it says that courts can't use their own independent research. And on page 54 of the Varm opinion, they cite their own independent research. So there's a lot of things here at play that in the Varnum opinion, it's plain judicial overreach. But when people agree with the end goal, they'll do anything to justify the means. What we're saying, take the emotion out of it. Just look at the process in which they got to that point. That warrants the no vote on Judge Wiggins.
Okay. We have a couple of ads, one from each side I'd like each of you to react to. First of all, Guy Cook,
Before we do that, can I just make a couple of comments here? I'll be very brief about what Bob just said. First of all, I don't purport to represent the bar. I'm a duly elected, president-elect of the 8,000-plus members of the Bar Association. Sure, there could be a minority of people who have a different view, but all of the lawyers, when they become a member of the bar, take a sworn oath as officers of the court to protect the courts from unfair attacks, and that's what's occurring here. It doesn't matter how many times in good faith Bob says these things. It doesn't make him true. It just doesn't make him true. You know, to quote Mark Twain, you know, a lie can travel halfway around the world before the truth gets its pants on. Repeating these things over and over again does not make them true. And I would encourage folks to go to judicialfacts.info, judicialfacts.info, or the Iowa State Bar Association website, where there's a plethora of information that supports what I'm saying.
Let's talk a little bit in closing here about what happens in either case. What do you believe, Bob Vanderplaats, that the polls, at least the last polls that I've seen, public policy polling data indicating 43% of Iowans said they would vote no on retaining Wiggins, 37% would support keeping the justice on the bench. I wonder, when this vote is over and done with, what is the aftermath? If Justice Wiggins is retained, what will you be doing then?
Well, first of all, Ben, I think the people have already won because they sent a message to the Supreme Court about the separation of powers, who makes law, who executes law, who gets to amend the Constitution. And so, therefore, if Justice Wiggins is ousted from his seat on the bench, I think the people won in regards to accountability. But I think a little bit of that has already taken place with the three justices being removed and even the effort right now with the focus on Justice Wiggins. But when you get to Guy Cook and the Bar Association and their interest in protecting the system that has benefited them so well, we're not about protecting the system. We're about defending the Constitution. So as Guy can put a spin on it, whether he believes it or not, because trial lawyers, they don't have to believe anything. They just have to try to make a case so that people will buy it. And that's what Guy is trying to do here. We're saying the Constitution speaks clearly on this. And if you read the Varm opinion, it speaks clearly on this.
Okay.
And we should never underestimate Iowans. And I believe Iowans did what was right in 2010. I think they're doing what's right today and putting a focus on Justice Wiggins.
Guy Cook,
you fit it right on the head here, Ben, with the question. And that is that a vote no on Wiggins doesn't do anything except cause a man to lose his job. It doesn't change the Constitution. It doesn't change the ruling in Varnum. It doesn't do anything but retaliate against a man doing his job who has rendered many, many opinions, none of which have ever been challenged but this one, along with the other six justices who all agreed that the ruling was correct, that the DOMA law was unconstitutional. Nothing will change by voting no on Wiggins except a man will lose his job. The rights guaranteed to all Iowa citizens will remain.
And the strength of Iowa's courts will be strengthened, and accountability will be measured. And Guy is a former high school principal. Accountability to a system that the Iowa State Bar Association advocated for in 1962 on retention. So when judges, for whatever reason, in this case, go outside the bounds of the Constitution, that they do get held accountable. Accountability is a key part of our checks and balances in the proper delivery of our government system.
Bob Vanderplaats, we have just a minute or two left to share some Facebook feedback. We have Jimmy on Facebook saying that Wiggins needs to go now. But this email, and let's get your reaction to it, Bob Vanderplaats, from Michael. When justices have to worry that voters will think of their decisions, they are no longer independent. It is the judiciary, not voters, who are best qualified to interpret the law. To be bluntly honest, most voters know astonishingly little about the law, but are easily swayed by influential individuals or organizations who happen to disagree with the law. What is your response, Bob Vanderplaats?
Well, we want the judiciary to be independent. Matter of fact, our whole deal here is about the judiciary to be independent. But they should never be independent to go outside of their constitutional parameters to make law or execute law or to take the people's voice on even trying to evolve our Constitution on us. And God help us if that ever happens, because then all your freedoms are at risk. Courts have taken way too much power, way beyond on their scope, and the Varnum opinion highlights it on steroids.
Here's what's really at risk, Ben. Here's what's really at risk, and it's a very simple question. Do we want judges who issue rulings for votes based on polls, contributions, intimidations, rather than the rule of law and Constitution? Do we want judges chased around with a bus with their picture and a no word on it every time they issue a ruling that somebody doesn't like? Judges do not issue rulings in return for votes in Iowa, and we shouldn't go back to the past when judges were elected and partisan politics and intimidation was pushed into our system.
A lot of money going into this campaign. Do you have worries about that, Bob Vanderplaats, that we will have campaigns that for here we will have retention issues at contentious issues in every election from now on? Do you see that?
Well, after the 2010 retention campaign, we were really hoping we wouldn't have to do this campaign again. Again, this is a high school principal in me. The people of Iowa held those three justices to account. The other four we thought should have duly resigned. But now it's time to hold Wiggins' account, and money is a part of that.
Okay.
And so, therefore, to get your voice out, that's what we need to do. But it looks like Guy doesn't agree with the Constitution of Article 1.2 that all power is inherent in the people. He believes all power is inherent in the courts. The people are the final arbitrators. That's the way this system was set up. Not the courts, okay. And not a bar association that supports the courts.
20 seconds back to Guy Cook, please, quickly.
I urge people to maintain what we have. Our state is great in part because of the great judges and justices and court system we have. Let's not interject politics. Let's maintain our fair and impartial courts. Let's vote yes to keep what we have that's good about our state. Turn over the ballot and vote yes for Justice Wiggins and the other judges on the ballot.
Guy Cook, thank you very much for joining us. Bob Vanderplaats, likewise, of the Family Leader. We appreciate you joining us.
Vote no on Wiggins.
Thank you, Bob.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury. Technical assistance today from Caitlin Fry. And executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. In Des Moines, help from John Pemble. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tune in tomorrow when we'll talk with journalist and foreign policy analyst Robin Wright about the challenges of the Islamic world, and also a conversation with incumbent Republican Tom Latham facing another incumbent, Leonard Boswell, for Iowa's new 3rd District. That tomorrow on this program, River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.